In a world full of movie podcasts, here is one more. Welcome to Defend Your Movie with Sean Donnelly
and Andrew Fiore.
The time has come again. The champion must end. It can only be one of us. Victoria!
That includes all you dimwits out there. This is one of your hosts of the DYM podcast. My name is Andrew Fiore, a.k.a. The Cool Breeze. I am here, joined as always, by my pal, my friend, comedian Sean Donnelly, a.k.a. Dutch, everybody.
Hello there, Andrew. How are you? Hello, dimwits. Formerly the Defenders, and now the Dimwits. And I got to say, Dimwit Nation is loving the Dimwit name. They really
are. Strong.
Oh, yeah, I got a message about the Patreon, and we're going to be figuring that out. And this woman messaged me and said, I'm a dimwit and a defender till I die.
That's the best kind.
Yeah, that's the best kind. So thank you guys so much for embracing the new branding. I don't think this has never been done before in the history of show business, Andy, where
never.
They just change. Like, it goes in the annals of history, the annals of history, with the mom change on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, with when Valerie Harper left the Hogan family. You know, when it just became the Hogan family.
There was all of a sudden a new Aunt Viv, you know?
There was a new Aunt Viv. Yeah, that was the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That was a big one. They did not like the first Aunt Viv.
Yeah, they would spice it up. Children were a big switch. You know, like the little girl.
Charles in Charge.
Well, Charles in Charge, but even like the Cosby Show, once you had, what's her name? Not Olivia. What was the little one's name? They brought her in like late in the show. And, I guess maybe most famously, Cousin Oliver of Brady Bunch.
Absolutely.
Aided.
Hey, really quickly, I'm getting a couple of pops from the mic from you. I don't know if that'll record onto the thing or not.
Oh, really?
Like a little bit of a like every once in a while. I think it might be from holding. You hold on the bottom. Don't hold the bottom. Maybe that'll do it. I think it's the connection. I think it should be good now. Oh, wait. There we go. Okay. I don't know. Just to give you a head. I don't know if it'll affect the recording. You're good now. Yeah. I haven't heard it. But okay. I heard it a bunch of times in a row. Sorry. Yeah. Cousin Oliver. That was a big
one.
Not
a popular guy.
Not at all. And I guess I just realized this as we're talking about it. I remember when, I guess it was their like spoof on Cousin Oliver was when they added Seven to Married with Children.
Yes.
Remember they just added a random kid to Married with Children? And it was almost like they were making fun of doing that a little bit, you know?
Seven. And I always wondered, was that before? We might have even talked about this before. Was that before or after the Seinfeld episode, which is most famously George's name for his kid? Seven.
I think, well, it was later. It was later in the
it was definitely later in Married with Children.
Yeah, and Married with Children went until what year?
I think around 97.
All right, so it probably, if I had to guess, it was probably 96, 97. The Seven episode, is it the last 2 years or is it not?
No, Seinfeld? I think Seven's in the prime six or seven seasons.
So I think maybe it was because of Seinfeld. I wonder if that was the case.
Okay, I'm doing a little research here. We've got, I'm going to share the screen with you. Some information on Seven. He spent 12 episodes of the seventh season of Married with Children. So
is that why he's called Seven?
How funny would that be?
It's got to be, because they were like so low rent on that show. They just like, I think they were trying to like make like a spoof on sitcoms. Because also they had, like, their production value was so low.
Magnificent Seven, the season 7 premiere of Married with Children, aired on Fox September 13th, 1992.
Oh, 92. See, that's what I'm saying. It was 80s into the 90s. So, no, then he definitely was before.
So they beat Seinfeld. Yeah, because I don't think, Seven was definitely not that early.
I wonder what grocery store Seven is robbing these days. I wonder where
he was a cute kid, man.
He was
all kid actors are cute.
It's funny, man. Now you realize how good Ed O'Neill is as an actor. He's so good, man. He's so freaking good.
Yeah, he really is. He really. I only watched the first few seasons of Modern Family, but you just realize the guy is just something special, huh?
Yeah, he's a guy. I think that probably should have done more movie stuff, but didn't do that. And you know, he kind of found his niche in TV, and apparently like he didn't want to sign on for Modern Family, but then I guess he read the pilot, and then he was like and apparently he was in with one of the other cast members in a car, and he told them, he goes, if this show doesn't make it, I don't know what I'm doing in this business. Like he said, oh, wow. Like that's how good, because that show is phenomenal. Like Modern Family is a really well written show. It's like, yeah. Modern Family is one of those like solid like veteran sitcom writers like doing what they want to do kind of thing in a way, like really quality, where you like almost like guys from like Cheers and stuff probably worked on Modern Family. You know, like it's like this like just the complete maturation of like a career writing these super solid sitcoms, you know?
Yeah, for sure. What were some of your first sitcoms that you remember?
Oh man. I remember like, here's the thing. I love Cheers. Okay.
Yeah.
But as a kid, I didn't, I don't know about you, but I remember
Cheers. Off my radar as a kid.
Really?
Was not a kid's show, you know, like
not a kid's show at all. But when it would come on, whatever show was on before it, I would watch. I don't know. Yeah. You know, wherever, I think whatever, I would always see the beginning of Cheers and turn it off because I was like, it's an adult show.
Right.
When I was a kid. So Cheers, one of the earliest ones I remember. Facts of Life was a big one. One Day at a Time we used to watch, but I don't know if that was live or if that was repeats, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
One Day at a Time. One Day at a Time, Facts of Life, Different Strokes was huge.
Different Strokes was big there for me. Yep.
I used to watch those like live and religiously. And that's why like back then in the 80s, like there was a thing, like some kind of social responsibility taken on by sitcoms. I think yes. Because they were so popular, they would have the drug episode, and then Different Strokes had, which everybody knows about, the child molestation episode, which is one of the creepiest half hours of TV in the world. But I don't think they've done a molestation. The only thing creepier than that is the All in the Family rape episode, which I can't watch. I can't watch.
Oh yeah,
watch.
No, it's brutal. But yeah, they would have they'd go, this week a very special episode.
A very special episode.
That's how you know you weren't going to get many laughs out of that week.
And then like sitcoms became such parodies of themselves. They don't do that anymore. Everything's like kind of tongue in cheek now. You know, everything's just like,
sure,
let's make this as silly as possible. But I remember
I will kill your parents dead, Sam.
The weird part about the molestation episode is that the child molester was Gordon Jump, and he was like the lovable boss from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Right, right.
And that show was done by the time he did it, I'm guessing. I don't know the time frame it must have been. But it was very soon after WKRP. Like it wasn't like 20 years later and he was doing some like method acting, type deal, you know. So for me, that was always strange. Already it was strange because it was a child molestation episode. But dude, like the fact that you had Gordon Jump, who was like beloved by like all of America. And this is back when.
Has maybe one of the most famous lines in television sitcom history.
Which is what?
From WKRP. He goes, with my hand to God, I swore I thought turkeys could fly. The turkey drop episode.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I'm just saying, like, that was a bad career choice to do that soon after they became KRP. You know, like, it's like, dude, you're changing your brand. He was changing his brand in a negative way.
Yeah,
you know,
different strokes did do that. They did tackle, because they did the kidnapping episode, too, with Sam. With he came on board, which goes back to our another. They bring that little redheaded freak in there from Terminator 2.
Yeah, yeah. They were trying to change. And from Salute Your Shorts. Remember he was on Salute Your Shorts?
Oh, yes. I was more of a little later. I was more of like Family Ties.
Yeah, Who's Family Ties was big for us. Who's the Boss? Yeah.
Because I think Alyssa Milano, not I think, I pretty much know that was the first girl I noticed where I was like, I'm in love with a girl. That was like my first crush. I had a girl crush at school, a realistic one, and then I had a celebrity crush. I had Jessica Hunt in third grade, and I had Alyssa Milano from Who's the Boss.
Yeah, yeah. Who's the Boss? That was huge for us too. I used to watch every episode of that. Family Ties was big. Family Ties does not hold up at all. Like if you watch it, it's not. Not that it's bad, but it's so 80s and politically focused, and it has that vibe of the political the climate of the 80s.
Like, yeah, the real liberal parents from the 60s, and then Alex B. Keaton's the young Republican.
Yeah, exactly. That it kind of doesn't fit into now.
Although I will tell you, another crush was Justine Bateman for the kid here. Boy,
yeah, absolutely. Holy moly, my friend. And then on top of that,
but I also watched a bunch of Nick at Night stuff, like older, like Mary Tyler Moore show, Bob Newhart, like, cause just, I don't know why I was, maybe it was just like background filler, but I do have like a weird sense of the older sitcoms, and then you could see where that kind of style get put in place, and there's some, like Dick Van Dyke Show even watched a lot of times, and you're like, oh, now that, you know, you work in comedy and you go, look at Carl Reiner was doing even way back then. You go, the guy was just so ahead of his time. And like, I guess for some reason I don't associate like the smartness of comedies that you see a lot nowadays with stuff like that back in. I don't know why I don't, but there were things in place that were really smartly written. And like, I love old Twilight Zone episodes, like the original Rod Serling's. And I love seeing all these old actors who are at the time really young actors. They're really fun to watch. I saw one the other day. It was a pitch for the Angels, and Murray Hamilton is so young in it. It's before he must have done anything. But it has to be before Graduate. It's obviously before Jaws and, all the, you know. But, it's fun to watch those old actors and be like, hey, is that young William Shatner?
Yeah, although like in the Twilight Zones and stuff, yeah. Well, the We would watch The Odd Couple. We'd watch Odd Couple was great, dude. Odd Couple.
Did
was
you
fantastic.
Watch with your family? Did you watch TV shows with your family?
I think at times I'd watch with my dad a lot. I would watch a lot of TV with my dad, and like so a lot of early stuff that was from before my time was because of my dad. Like so Abbott, because that's not sitcom, but like Abbott and Costello was like huge. My dad liked Abbott and Costello a lot. We watched Three Stooges. And then when Seinfeld came along, that was like religious. Like every Thursday at 9, we'd watch Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
And that's part of the reason why I have such an affinity for Seinfeld now, the show. But like, it's like nostalgic as well as being like the best television show of all time. Like it's like,
yeah, I see. I'm the complete opposite. I watched everything by myself.
Did you?
Yeah. My dad thought the TV was he called it the idiot box.
Yeah, my dad would call that too, but he still
the boob
watched.
Tube.
Yeah,
my dad
boob tube. Yeah, boob tube. Yeah.
He would like watching Yankees baseball games, but then he would say, "All right, now turn it off." And so it was like we never had it on like marathon viewings. God, sorry, my house phone rang. But I would only ever watch with my dad. Stuff when my mom, like Johnny Carson and The Tonight Show, and that was either if my mom was not around or had like gone to bed early, and I was able to like sneak downstairs and just like, even though I think my dad knew I was there, he'd let me watch for a little bit because then like he didn't acknowledge my presence, but then he'd be like, "That's enough, upstairs." I would just leave. But it's fun to go back and kind of watch that old timey stuff nowadays because it does give me that sense of, I don't know. I just like watching it because it makes me think about like.
It's nostalgic, man.
Yeah, it's nostalgic. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so good. And a lot of that stuff was so quality. Well, I've been saying this recently, like I bring it up a bunch because it's all over TV is. It's one of those shows that some people like it. Gay dudes love it, this show. The Golden Girls.
And this show.
and the Chicagos love the show. The Golden Girls is phenomenal. As far as like sitcom writing goes, like it is so strong. There's a joke every 10 seconds in the Golden Girls, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to be able to do that, like you watch shows now and it's like, the quality isn't there as much on certain shows. Like people love Big Bang Theory. I'm like, yeah, it's the same kind of, tempo, but it's not,
yeah, it's a rhythm,
as,
yeah.
It's just not as good. Like it's just not, you know, it's just not, sure. It's like, it's more lowest common denominator stuff. And Golden Girls had some like, you know, innuendo jokes and stuff like that. But think about the premise of that show and making that funny is so much harder than other stuff. Right. You know?
I know. Can you imagine pitching that today?
Oh my
Got
God.
Idea.
Four old white
women live together.
Oh my God. They'd be like, they're like so old. You mean like 40?
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're like, what do you
29?
Mean? Like, 29, 29-ish, 28. They're out of college. You're saying they're out of college, so they're living together out of college, and they would never do that. You know, there was a point where old people were just gone from TV, and if they were on TV, like that's why people love Betty White still, because they're like it's the only old person people know on TV. But back in the day, you watch all the game shows and stuff. They would put like senior citizens on game shows. That would never happen now. Like, and they would put like a lot of boring people on game shows. They weren't like casting it as much as they do now.
Yeah, but yeah, and then it is funny also to have the same kind of thought which we originally started with. It's like how Hollywood never rebrands anything. It's like you see Alec Baldwin hosting like a new version of a talk show with other celebrities on the talk show, and then like,
yeah,
because game shows were also a big part of my childhood. I watched a lot of game shows in the afternoon when I get home from school. Press Your Luck, obviously. Price.
Oh out. Yeah, huge.
But then like, you know, even like Password and old shows like that, you'd see celebrities and you would always think, I think when I was growing up, I'd go, well, real A-list celebrities don't do that. It did dip for a while, but then it did come back where it's like, yeah, celebrities do game shows. Like that's essentially what The Tonight Show is now. It's a big game show. You know what I mean? Like that always was a thing. It's not like a new thing. It is just another rebranding of what was already done.
Absolutely. Because back in the day, especially, and they do it.
Obviously, Hollywood Squares was, you know, famous for that.
Right. They'd have it at night. Like, when they have the game shows at night, that's when a sign of, like, oh, we're going to, like, now we're like, oh, we're going to get famous people to do this game show.
Yeah.
So they had, like, that, and the Match Game was big for it, too, and they brought back the Match Game with Alec Baldwin, right? That's the one that Alec Baldwin did.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Boy, did I watch a lot of game shows. Now that we opened up that topic, I'm starting to think of all the ones. Holy hell.
Oh, I watch them now. I love them. There's one on that Meredith Vieira hosts now called 25 Words or Less. It's awesome. It's so great. And they pit two comics with a contestant, and it's like you're giving clue words, and you have to guess what the word is. I don't know why. There's probably a board game that's associated with that, but and it's so much fun. And it's like a lot of people we know that are like on the show. Like, you know, like right, Pete Holmes, Sasheer Zamata's on it, you know, stuff like that. You know?
Yeah. Boy, $25,000 pyramid. Oh, my God. Press Your Luck was a big one for me. I loved the whammies. I loved the style of the game. It was just a real fun one.
They brought that back a couple of times.
That's a fun documentary too. The guy who scammed it.
Yeah, it's crazy. That guy's like autistic. He's got to be on the spectrum because he was able to figure out, because they use the same patterns, right? Of the board.
Yes, flickering. That's how he figured it out.
So that's what he did. He knew what pattern it would be. That's insane. You ever watch the one about the guy? Yeah, you're still doing that thing. Just hold your mic from the meat of it. The meat, not the potatoes. Yeah, I think that might make a difference because also you were lower and then you got higher, your voice. I think it's just a connection. Do I sound all right?
Yeah, you sound fine.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, everybody.
It's happening enough. Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, cool breeze.
Yeah, the cool breeze doesn't really worry too much.
That's what that sound is. It's just a cool breeze hitting the mic. dude, like the one about Price is Right, I've been obsessed with lately, the past like year. And
how's old Drew Carey doing?
Drew Carey's doing great. He's so good in that show. I tweeted at him recently because he'll make comments that nobody laughs at on the show, but like references. Like he made like a Honeymooners reference because he goes, they have a golf game on Price is Right where you have like sink a putt. And he goes, he puts the ball down and he goes, hello, ball, which is from Honeymooners. So I tweeted at him, hello, ball. And he goes, oh, that's what Art Carney says right before he gives a blowjob. That's what he said back to me on Twitter. I'm like, I'm shocked this guy wrote that on Twitter. He's like a family game show host guy, you know?
Oh, that's amazing.
I've met him twice, Drew Carey.
Very cool.
One time I met him at a show in LA called What's Up Tiger Lily, and he was really nice, and he was so funny, man, because it was during like the whole healthcare argument was going on, and he was like, yeah, that's something you guys worry about. I'm rich. I don't have to worry about that at all. It was really funny. And then another time I saw him like outside where the studio is for Price is Right, because it's over by the Grove in LA, and I was like, hey, I'm like, hey, man. I'm like, I know because Ryan Hamilton used to open for him, or I think maybe he still does sometimes, but whatever. And I go, hey, I know Ryan Hamilton. Like, I know I'm friends with him from New York. And he was like, oh, yeah, all right. And he just kind of blew me off. He just was like, all right, cool. All right, thanks. All right, see ya. Fucking jackass. So that was my Drew Carey meetups.
Very, very, very cool. I guess to keep in line with our throwback episode, I watched a really old movie. I watched The Birdman of Alcatraz from 1962 just last night.
I never even seen that.
Now, I don't know why you would, because it's an odd movie, but I just caught it from the very beginning, and I just kind of kept watching it. And it's based on a true story. This guy, Bob Stroud, went into prison in, like, 1913, you know, for a crime. I think it might have been murder. And then is a really just like bad dude and just a loner. And then he's in Leavenworth in Texas, and he kills a security guard. He kills a guard and gets thrown into like basically solitary confinement for life.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
Which you look back now, and here's my main takeaway from this. The prison system was a whole lot different, and I'm sure, I don't know how many stories your dad told.
Not many, because he didn't want us to get scared or nervous. Yeah.
Well, solitary confinement wasn't really solitary confinement back in the early, I guess this would have been the 20s, 30s, 40s when he spent his time in prison, because he's starting to eventually make a friendship with one of the corrections officers. He's got basically like an open kind of cell. They basically had single cells.
Like Goodfellas jail?
Huh?
Like Goodfellas jail for the mobsters?
Not Goodfellas jail, but I mean, because these guys were, you know, bad people in prison. They were in their own cells. But it, like, I'm like, this seems preferable. If you've got to be in jail, you don't have a roommate. You've got people around you, so you're not actually in solitary. And you, like, you can talk to people around you. It's not cut off from the rest of the world. And so he's got his alone time in the yard. He finds this little bird and then basically nurses it back to health. And then in some weird plot twist, which happened in real life, the warden, who he eventually becomes lifelong friends with, allows him and other prisoners to start to raise canaries and birds. And he becomes like an ornithologist. He like creates medicines. Is this all true? Yeah, he like cures bird diseases and stuff from jail. I looked at, I went down a Wikipedia wormhole.
Wow.
After the movie. Yeah. So it's like this crazy true story where like this guy was actually regarded as like a leading scientist without any sort of formal knowledge in curing bird sicknesses. And he raised like hundreds and maybe even thousands of birds over like 40 years in from jail. It's kind of crazy. Very interesting, like real life story. But yeah, I go, yeah, I don't see that flying in jail these days where you're just allowed to keep pets and like solitary. The hole is the hole from what I know.
From what you know. You're like, when I was in solitary, it's the hole. Like,
hole, baby.
It's not great. There's no birds in solitary.
No, I picture like an Andy Dufresne hole, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. They must like you know, everything was corrupt back in the day. Like, it's still corrupt. But I mean, like, they were corrupt, like, where they were like, eh, give them a bird. Like, yeah, give them a bird to hang out with in solitary. Come on. Like, it was a little bit more humane. now you probably have, it's not like that at all, I'm sure. I'm sure it's like, they say that, didn't they outlaw it in some places, solitary confinement? They say past a certain point, it's cruel and unusual punishment or something like that? Inhumane? It's inhumane?
I don't know the penal codes that well, but it sounds like a thing that I might have read.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like one of my takeaways with the way he's like talking to the guards. He's like, you've always been square with me, so I don't mind if you louse things up every now and then. I'm like, you're the prisoner. What world are we getting away with this? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but well, let's also, Andy, it's also a movie. You have to suspend disbelief.
Sure, sure. So
I don't know if that was happening in the actual jail where he was like, listen, you crank, you screw. Yeah, listen to me.
They called each other Finks a lot. He goes, listen, you Fink.
Fink was pretty great. One. Wait, yeah. So when was the movie made?
1962, but it took place in the late teens and up through his death in 1953, I believe.
And what? And who directed it? You know,
yeah, a guy named like I looked at the director. It was like Frank Rottenheimer, some guy I've never heard of, but
yeah. Wow,
was Burt Lancaster and Carl Malden? So you know,
oh, that's cool.
Familiar guys, yeah.
Who plays the prisoner?
Burt Lancaster,
yeah.
And okay. I saw pictures of the actual guy, and they really nailed it. It was like,
oh, really?
They look very similar, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty crazy. I rewatched a couple things. I watched a few things, but I also made a realization that I should mention about Reservoir. I watched rewatched two Wes Andersons, Bottle Rocket and Rushmore.
Okay, because I have a question I want to ask you later.
Sure, what is it? Oh, but which one?
You go. I'll circle back to the Wes Anderson.
But the Reservoir Dogs thing is now. You know Reservoir Dogs pretty well, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now the opening scene of Reservoir Dogs, right?
Is Steve Buscemi running?
No. This is when they're at the very first scene of the diner, and then the Madonna speech, right? And then Steve Buscemi gives his speech about tipping, which I don't know if people know this. But that is Tarantino. Tarantino had that conversation with Lawrence Spender, who was the producer of the movie, and they put it into the script, I guess. But that was his outlook for a long time on tipping, was what Steve Buscemi was saying, like the exact same
thing. Yeah.
Which is like, Jesus, this guy must be a real good hang, you know? It's like, anyway, like you're like, that's like another don't meet your heroes thing, yeah? But anyway, so there's the part where Joe comes back over to the table and he goes, hold on, somebody didn't put in. First off, there's something unbelievable in that because he counts all the dollars in about 2 seconds. He goes, somebody didn't put in their buck. And it's like, you don't know there's not enough. There's like 12 bucks there. You can't, you don't know it's 12 bucks right away. You know, whatever. That doesn't matter.
All right.
Yeah. Movie stuff. Yeah, whatever. But at one point he says, he goes, who didn't cough in? And then Tim Roth, Mr. Orange, says, Mr. Pink. And he goes, Mr. Pink, why not? He goes, he doesn't believe in it. No, he goes, Mr. Pink, why not? And he goes, he didn't.
He doesn't believe in it.
He doesn't believe in it. Yeah.
He answers for him a couple times.
Now, my theory is this. It's, if you notice, nobody else says a fucking word because they're all criminals and they don't fucking rat on anybody.
Wow.
So
Oh, that's genius, dude. You know,
so that it's almost like a precursor to show you very early on that he's the cop because he has no problem saying it's Pink that did it.
I love this, and I fully support this, and I think you're on to something there, buddy.
I should look it up, but there's got to be an interview.
I think you might be on to something.
It's got to be.
Brilliant takeaway.
Thanks, man. It's got to be. It's got to be.
That's a great read.
Isn't that, because I've seen that movie, I've seen that movie, dude, 50 times I've seen that movie. I've seen that movie so many times.
Yeah.
And I never put it together because I'd watch it. But then I'm sitting there going, why is he the only one talking? And at first I chalked it up to, oh, it works better for the script because it's like the comedy of the back and forth. But then I'm like, no, but why does that have to be Mr. Orange? And that's why. I guarantee you that's why.
Oh, yeah. That's now, right? It's like once you hear it, I go, oh, yeah, it can't be anything else.
Yeah, because it makes the most sense. It's actually a really smart thing
to
do.
Super smart and a great, really? Great find, man. Well done.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Josh. Oh, you know, I try. You know, yeah. Hey, man, if you believe in yourself and you don't exercise and you have no other hobbies besides movies and you watch and TV all day, you can attain your dreams of noticing something small in a movie, noticing a very tiny detail in a movie.
Did you research it at all? Did you actually go on a fact-finding mission?
I didn't, but I'm gonna do. I'll do that today, and for next episode, I'll find out there's got to be an interview with somebody asked him about it. There's got to be.
Absolutely. Wow, that's great. That's a thing I'm going to go and tell people now. I go, hey, did you ever see this? That's really good.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, it's got to be it because he's so smart. There's no way he didn't think of that to do that.
Yeah, that's a great, great read. Well, that's a beautiful find there. I was going to ask you about – I was driving back from the beach this week, and I was thinking about this, and I wanted to ask you this question, and it's funny that you brought up Rushmore and Bottle Rocket, because I was just driving, daydreaming, and I thought to myself, I was just like, man, isn't it too funny that like the two of the great filmmakers from really our generation, kind of, you know, the late 90s and still through this day, are both named Anderson? Like, what are the chances? And then I just, you know, obviously did that further daydream. I go, who do I pick? I go, who do I like more? And I had a really hard time with coming up with Wes or Paul Thomas.
Did you come up with one?
I think it's Paul Thomas.
For me, it's Paul Thomas. Right now, it's Paul Thomas. If you would have asked me 10 years ago, it probably would have been Wes Anderson.
Yeah, I know. And that was a really hard conclusion to get to, because those, even first five films, I love Bottle Rocket, I love Rushmore, I love Tenenbaums, I love Life Aquatic. And okay, so maybe four, but I mean, there's a few in there I don't love, but then just the Magnolia and Boogie Nights and There Will Be Blood. It's like those first
better track three, record. Yeah.
I mean, holy shit. Maybe Punch Drunk Love was in there before There Will Be Blood, but I mean, good God, man. It's like, I appreciate the lightheartedness and the whimsy of Wes Anderson and the irreverence and like, the ensembles, but like the gravitas of Wes Anderson, I mean, of Paul Thomas Anderson's films. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, I want to say there's a little more meat, and it's just like a little,
it's all way more art. It's way more artistic. There's way more genuineness in it. If that's a word, if I can say that, like there's way more, it's more moving than Wes Anderson movies are.
Yeah, for sure. And then we have The Master, and it's like, which I also read. Yeah. I think that's his favorite.
It's his favorite. I read that too. I read that article. We also had an article. We were going to go over a couple of those articles on the podcast.
Maybe that's what got me to thinking about it. Yeah,
it might have been. Yeah, but I'll tell you what I've realized about Wes Anderson is, I don't know if I, first off, I it took me a long time to admit that I don't like, who's Squid and the Whale? Noah Baumbach.
Noah Baumbach, me too.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit, maybe a couple weeks ago or something. But what I realized is this, Wes Anderson, not that I'm saying I don't like Wes Anderson, but I used to go, Wes Anderson's my guy. When I was younger, I was like, I love him. I love Tenenbaums is like my favorite one of my favorite movies. It's one of my favorite his movies. But what I really realized is that I like Wes Anderson teaming up with Owen Wilson.
Same here. We've talked about this before, and I agree 100%.
Because
something missing when he's not there to maybe guide him. It's kind of like the Ellen Chenoweth editing with Scorsese. You go, you need that steady. You just need another set of eyeballs on this thing.
Yep.
Just go, hey,
and with them, it's reel it in. And I'm guessing that Owen Wilson is putting in that sense of humor. Dignan from Bottle Rocket is writing the rest of those movies. You know what I'm saying? Like that's a personification of what I liked about the Wes Anderson movies, that sense of humor. And I don't think he has it completely on his own. I think he needs Owen Wilson for to make it like a Tenenbaums, or I was talking to my roommate about this, where it's more grounded, where it's not just storybook.
Agreed.
Like, I know I'm saying I don't appreciate the other ones. Moonrise Kingdom, I don't think is a good movie. I don't think it is either.
Despised it almost when I watched it. And that's a terrible thing, because when it's one of your favorite filmmakers, you go, I have such high expectations.
Yeah.
Because I love this man's movies so much. And then you get let down, and you go, ah. And then you go, is it me? And you go, no.
And usually it's like the adult kid dynamic. You should have been him, like, completely. I also
Dignan, one of James L. Brooks said Dignan was the greatest name he saw in a script of all time.
Really? Yeah, James L. Brooks said that?
James L. Brooks said that. Yeah, so you go that, you know, that's a high compliment. He goes, well, because I think he was one of the original producers of Bottle Rocket.
And right.
The script, I saw the name Dignan in there. He goes, I almost knew these guys were intelligent writers and that they had something.
Well, Bottle Rocket is so freaking good, and Dignan in it is one of the best characters I think in a movie ever.
I will give them this. And I will lend this to Wes Anderson a lot more. His subtleties and his eye for really, really layered stuff is excellent, like style-wise and design-wise, but little things like names and just the way phrasing a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what I love about Wes Anderson, and that's not necessarily a Paul Thomas Anderson. Paul Thomas Anderson, you're getting like powerhouse acting performances.
Powerhouse.
Or like, but like, there's little words and phrases of Wes Anderson that I love. Just the way they say things.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's a lot more comedic, and so they're different in that regard. But like, we know how many times have we done like just the Gene Hackman? It's just like the turns of phrase. He goes, "Dad, you were never sick." He goes, "But I'm gonna live." It's like that's a weird, great way of hilarious writing.
Yeah, you know, it's like this Wes Anderson backwards logic in the movies of them just saying like there's almost like these not sequitur, but like these things next to each other that
sure
it's like a true plus a true equals a false. It's like that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like they're not related at all. You know.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to Wes Anderson, I still like Wes Anderson because you need him. You need his you need his artistry to create the whole product.
It was
and I also really like I like Grand Budapest Hotel, and I think that's mostly him. I don't know if Owen Wilson was involved in that one, so I'm not going to say he can't. That I don't like any of the ones that are mostly him. Yeah. You know?
That was the one that I came back on board with Wes Anderson. I was like, this one feels the most. Too. Wes Anderson, Owen Wilson-y kind of vibe from the last few that were made before.
Yeah. And I will say this. I wonder this. I know it's totally different, and I really have this thought, and I'd love to find out. Do you think that he wanted to cast Bill Murray in Rushmore because of Meatballs? Because the crux of Meatballs is his relationship with the kid Rudy. And then I was watching it yesterday, and I was like, I was watching it.
I know, sure.
And I think even at one point they're riding bikes together, and that kind of resonated with me, like with him and Rudy running like all the time together, like in Meatballs.
Yeah.
I just also rewatched Meatballs, which has one of the best scenes ever in a movie. The It Just Doesn't Matter scene is one of my favorite things ever. But but maybe it's not, but I think they just love Bill Murray, and Bill Murray like responded to the serial so well.
Yeah, he's just got that way of acting with younger actors with such ease. It's like I understand what you're saying, because you see that dynamic in Lost in Translation, like just the way he can so effortlessly kind of make Scarlett Johansson kind of feel at ease, which and just his natural humor.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell. I think a lot of that is just his natural personality and not even acting.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Oh, no, I think it's him.
And it's exactly what you mean in Meatballs, and it's exactly why Rushmore works so well, too.
But I'm saying, like, the older guy, young kid dynamic, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Rushmore
is so great in Lost in Translation, too.
He's so good in it.
Can I give Sofia Coppola a shout-out? I was watching The Virgin Suicides. I didn't technically rewatch it because I had to run out the door. I went somewhere, but it was on. And that is a really well-made, well-written movie for her first film. It's a really dark but also kind of funny, kind of in the vein of the filmmakers we're talking about. It would kind of fall into maybe the same genre. And also a great book. Jeffrey Eugenides, I believe, wrote it. And he wrote, like, Middlesex and shit like that. So
okay. Well, it's her dad. I think it's in the genetics maybe a little bit. Her dad made a bunch of good movies.
Comes from a talented family.
Yeah.
No, Nick Cage is a Coppola too, buddy.
I know. And he was in Mandy.
He's actually credited in Fast Times as Nick Coppola.
That's right. Yeah, I saw that. You have a Mandy poster. Mandy's like one of the...
Yeah, a little 8x12 framed in my living room. But, well, I hope you guys all enjoyed the throwback episode. That was a little, the annals of history, as Shawnee put it.
The annals of history. The annals, the canals of history.
I think we'll have to title this one, the annals of history right there.
Yeah, exactly. But, everybody, Dimwits, you got to know this. Andy Fiore, Andrew Fiore, you know him as a cool breeze. He has a show on Sirius Satellite Radio every Thursday at 4 p.m. called the Raw Report and on Raw Dog 99. Does it every week. So you have to check that out. And you can check him out on, I think it's at Andy Fiore on Twitter and Instagram. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. You know all my stats. You nailed them perfectly. And if I may, in turn, and if you're sitting in your car on Thursdays, you might as well hop in there a day earlier on Wednesdays at the same time, 4 p.m., same channel, Raw Dog 99 for Celebrate. It's a fun show, great idea for a show. Shawnee and is Frank Kevin McCaffrey, another hilarious comic. Celebrate a topic every week and have great guests on to celebrate things as well. And you can follow him all over the socials at Shawnee Time. And we have a big, big announcement for the Dimwits. Next week, we have two opportunities for everybody to come out. One is a little more podcast-centered, but next Wednesday, August 5th, Shawnee and I will be in Wildwood, New Jersey, and we'll be doing two shows at Captain Jack's. First one is at 6, and the second one is at 9:30. I might have that backwards. It might be 6:30 and 9. Go to our socials. You'll find all the important information.
Yeah, we're posting about it. So there's two shows
on Wednesday in Wildwood, New Jersey. That'll be a fun time. It's a fun venue, fun crowd. And then we've got a double kind of headline bill the next night in Royersford, PA. It's part of Soul Joel's Summer Comedy Festival. We're both going to be doing stand-up, but more importantly, we're both going to be doing a live episode of the DYM podcast, Shawnee.
Yeah. We're super looking forward to it. So, guys, if you're in those areas, please come check us out. Also, come up to us. Tell them, you know, we'll socially distance, come up to us, and tell us that you're a dimwit, and then you were formerly a defender, that you know the meats and the peats, that you know Dutch and the Cool Breeze, and we'll say hello. We'll hang out. You know, if you're at Captain Jack's, we'll buy you a drink. We'll have fun. It'll be a good time.
Absolutely.
And you can also, you'll see the information for it on our Instagram for the show on at the DYM podcast on Twitter and at the DYM podcast on Instagram. So check those out. You'll see the flyer for the show. It's our buddy Soul Joel, who I really have to hand it to. The guy is doing these great shows.
A hustler.
He's a hustler, and he knows what comics, how they want to do a show. Like, he's not screwing up the setup. And it's very hard to get the setup right now because real stand-up comedy is not really happening, like, indoors. So, so come on by and, you know, take a trip down to the beach and come see us. Or if you're in the rural areas, come check us out. Thank you guys so much for listening, Dimwits. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review. And we will see you next Friday. Hopefully we'll see you at the show. And thank you so much. And we love you. And goodbye.
Bye.